Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hang on to your balls. It's time for the Horror Hangout Podcast.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout Podcast, where two bearded film fans watch the 50 best horror movies ever and talk about them. My name is Luke Condor with K, and I'm joined by Mr.
Ben Errington.
And today we have our resident zombie and Day of the Dead expert. He studied zombie studies at the Zombie University. His name's Dom Biddulph. How's it going, Dom?
Hey.
No worries. So, Dom, why don't you tell us, first of all, like, who are you and why we should listen to your zombie knowledge?
So, as you said, yeah, I graduated from the Zombie University.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like zombie films. I like horror films, but I particularly have I love for George A. Romero's kind of trilogy, you know, the ones that started what zombies are today.
Yeah. And so how young were you when you first saw your first zombie film? Five, six?
No, I think it would have been when I was in secondary school. I probably watched Dawn of the Dead when I was about 13 or 14. I think it was on TV one time.
Yeah.
And I stumbled across it. Because I think a lot of horror fans say, you know, they were watching something on TV and a film that they didn't expect pops up. And
the first one I saw was the one where the zombies talked, and I thought that's what zombies were for a long time. Which one is that?
Where the zombies talked.
Yeah,
that might be Return of the Living Dead.
Return of the Living Dead. That's right. Yeah, and it's like that whole is that where We're Coming to Get You, Barbara, is from?
Night of the Living Dead.
Okay.
So the other day we were talking about Army of Darkness and how weird that is, you know, the sequel naming and Evil Dead, and it gets really, really, really weird with the Night of stuff because there was a bunch of unofficial sequels.
Oh, okay.
So Return of the Living Dead is like a horror comedy where they talk and is unrelated to the original films. And then there's also Zombie 2, which is the Italian, like Lucio Fulci's one, which is called Zombie 2 because Night of or Dawn of is another one. It's crazy. Yeah, it's really weird.
So there's no Zombie 1 then?
No, it's referring to Dawn of the Dead, which is sometimes called Zombie in Italy, I think.
Is it similar to the film Troll 2, where there's no actual troll, but it's called Troll 2? For some bizarre reason, because people think actually, if it's a sequel to something, it's probably half decent, you know. So yeah, never watched that. I'm sure you guys have, but
that's the worst movie in the world, right? I watched a documentary about it, and it was really interesting. It was really
fun. What's that documentary called? Best Worst Movie, is that right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
yeah.
So last week we talked about I've forgotten already. What the hell did we talk? Oh yeah, Cat People. And week we're talking about number 44 on the list. We're talking about Day of the Dead from 1985, which is why we have a zombie expert on. So, Ben, do you want to tell us a bit about what Day of the Dead is?
Yeah, sure thing. Day of the Dead is a 1985 American horror film written and directed by the legendary George A. Romero, and the third film in Romero's Dead series, being preceded by Night of the Living Dead from 1968 and Dawn of the Dead 1978. And a brief synopsis, it is about a small group of military officers and scientists who dwell in an underground bunker as the world above is overrun by zombies.
Yeah, so this is what the clever people over at Empire have to say. George Romero originally conceived this as the Gone with the Wind of horror movies before slash budgets swiftly torpedoed his dreams of a zombie epic. No matter, the doyen of the undead merely served up another chewy allegory for humanity's doom-laden with gory moments enhanced by Tom Savini's... magisterial makeup designs. Following on from the Dawn of the Dead, with the world in the grip of a full-scale zombie infestation, the survivors head south, in practically every sense, to a bunker in a swampy corner of Florida. There, a crazed doctor tries to turn the shufflers, including the iconic Bob, played by Sherman Howard, back into productive members of society. The subtext, again, is clear. The zombies are the least of our problems in a world driven by violence and greed. Rotten Tomatoes give it 82%. It's got a 7.2%... 7.2 out of 10 on Metacritic. And Roger Ebert, you'll have to tell me what you think about this, but he only gave it 1 out of 5. 1.5 out of 4. Oh, God.
Roger, his rating system is off the wall.
Yeah. But I read it, and like he said it was about, to do with the acting. He wasn't convinced by the actors, which is I do have a bit of a problem with like a couple of the acting performances there, but we'll talk about that a bit more. In our little Facebook group, Edward Harvey said, "It's a good addition to the Romero classics, but my favourite is still the original Night of the Living Dead." So, what did you guys think? What did you? I mean, Dom, you've seen this what a million, 2 million times?
Quite a few times.
Cool. I mean, Ben, is this the first time you've seen this?
No. I've seen this several times, but this is the first time I've probably seen it in quite a number of years. I think I remember seeing it in a similar way. So, Dom, you said, was it Dawn of the Dead you saw, just like stumble across on TV?
Yeah, I
think the first one I ever saw was Day of the Dead, just stumble across it on TV. Because I remember, in similar vein to you, Luke, just Bub talking. And, you know, while obviously in terms of the Dead series, that was new ground. It was treading new ground. Because it was one of the first zombie films I ever saw, I also thought that zombies were kind of, could talk or could be taught to talk. Yeah, but I remember being pretty freaked out by this when I was young. I think it's quite a claustrophobic film, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think that sort of that element really sort of like resonated with me when I was younger, and yeah, it definitely got under my skin, I think.
Yeah. This is the first time we've watched, and Kat watched it with me as well. I was telling Dom earlier, we watched it and I was literally saying, "Oh my God," out loud. Like, mainly to do with the special effects. They're so, like, even by today's standards, they're so gruesome. But yeah,
they're really good.
Yeah. I feel like I missed out because I've never saw this film growing up. I always knew about, people would always talk about Bub, but I'd just be like, oh yeah, he's the clever one, right? I knew what they were talking about. I just hadn't seen this film. This has been the film I've enjoyed watching the most so far.
Definitely an enjoyable one, especially all the stuff with Bub, you know, is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I would have loved some real good fleshed out Bub backstory, and I'm sure there is some, like in fan fiction or like a comic
someone's
written it. But have you guys ever seen the film Fido, which is about, it's years ago I saw it, but it's basically about a domesticated zombie who is almost kept like a pet and like a house servant. It's like a bit, it's a comedy. I can't remember how many years it came out, but it reminded me a lot. It reminded me a lot of that, sort of going back to it after seeing that fighter. Yeah.
So Dan, what did you think about this when you watched this? You watched it twice before you did this recording, right?
Yeah. Okay. So I hadn't watched it for a few years. And I thought, okay, I'll watch it once through, as a refresher, and then I went back through and I was like, okay, I'm gonna look at this with a
critical eye.
Yeah, critical eye. I liked it a lot more this time around, actually. Because when I first watched it, it was after after seeing Dawn of the Dead, which I really instantly loved. Like Ben said, it was kind of too intense and claustrophobic and dark, and like the characters are just so oppressively like awful in the film that I really didn't enjoy it the first time round.
Did it give you a bit of a headache the first time you watched it? Like, there's the whole scene where Rhodes is just shouting for about half an hour. I'm just like, oh my god. Like, and see his face reddening, and look, my vein was popping up on my head, and I was like, oh my lord, I don't know how much I can do this. And then everyone started dying.
Fairly early in the film, there's Rickles and the other one, you know, the two, and they're just kind of like cackling.
It's
horrible, you know, you can really imagine that kind of person, and it's just like, I don't want to be stuck deep underground with these
douches.
Oh, God, yeah, imagine being with those guys. All of the military guys were just so head doing. It was just like, oh god, just be quiet for five minutes.
Yeah, this is one of my problems with the film, actually. I did feel like it was like, oh, they're army people, they're all dickheads, obviously.
Yeah,
but then again, I've remembered like Miguel, he is one of those guys, but he's not like that. He's more normal, I guess. Well, he's mental, but he's more normal.
Yeah.
Okay, so the key players in the film, we've got Dr. Sarah Bowman, who I guess is our main character. I don't know if that's really true, because she doesn't really, she almost called her the protagonist of the story, because she doesn't really change. She doesn't really go through much of a journey, does she? But she's the one we start the film with her and we end the film with her. So her whole thing, she's a doctor and she's trying to reverse the process and she's trying to save the world. We've got, as mentioned before, Private Miguel Salazar. He's the only like nice person who's an army man. He's kind of losing his mind throughout the film. He just gets worse and worse.
He's OTT.
Bill McDermott and just a guy called John. That's he hadn't got a surname in any of the credits I can see. He's called John. They play like the good guys who are neither doctors or army folks, but they're sort of they're Sweden, I guess, in this. And then we've got Dr. Matthew Frankenstein Logan, who's the mad scientist, who has no moral sense of what to do with dead people other than cut them up and use them as treats, because there has to be a reward. And then you've got Captain Henry Rhodes, who's the sort of dictator. He's just taken command of his troops under the ground, because I think the former commander dies right at the beginning or something. I didn't really catch that bit. But then Henry Rhodes, he's the guy who's just shouting like all the time. I just could not get over that.
One man power trip. He's got the power, and suddenly he's going on that one man power trip, and he's just brazen with it.
And Bub as well. He's the zombie who's learning to do tricks, I guess.
Maybe Bub's the protagonist. You know,
sort of. But he's definitely a main character. He defeats the bad guy. No way.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I was rooting for Bub all the way through, you know. I wanted him to be there. I wanted to be saying stuff.
Yeah.
Salute
was amazing. So who's your favorite character in this cadre of peeps?
I mean, Bub is incredible. His performance, I don't know the guy who plays Bub, but it's pretty, I don't know, it's very, very different to what we've seen in other zombie stuff, I think.
Yeah.
Fido. I haven't seen it, but I remember seeing the trailer. Maybe that tried to do that same thing of bringing back humanity to them, but I think Bub's pretty great. I really like John and Billy Boy.
John. I feel like Bub, the actor who played Bub, had like more nuance in his eyes than like the rest of the cast. There's a bit where he puts the headphones on the Walkman, and I'm just like, wow, that's pretty good. But I'm not too sure if it was pretty good, if I'm just seeing it like as opposed to like all the shouting. I swear that most of this film is shouting. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I can appreciate what they're trying to represent. Like, they're trying to represent a close-knit group of people trying to survive, falling apart, desperate, not knowing what to do. But it was just, because we didn't really witness, you didn't necessarily witness anything from beforehand with the other guy who was like the captain or whoever. when he was in charge.
Yeah.
Because obviously, one of the other doctors says that when he was in charge, I mean, he was a teddy bear in comparison to Rhodes. So we didn't really get to see that. We just kind of just see it going crazy. Like, were there all the other military guys?
Yeah.
This intense as well before. Just
we really do dive into it as it's already falling apart.
Yeah. It felt like he was doing a wrestling promo for like most of the film. Like, he was just flexing intensely. Although, to be fair, so if we get into the story, I would say that first scene that does take quite a long time when they're sort of defining this is my law now. I did find that quite tense. I just felt like the performance could have been a bit more nuanced and a bit more up and down to it. So the film opens with a dream sequence that I thought was pretty good. It's where the doctor, I forgot her name already, Sarah, is like ticking off days on a calendar or something like that. And as she goes to tick one off, a load of zombie hands reach out of the wall. And we get our first sort of jump scare. And then it cuts to... Does everybody know where they are? I know they're in Florida, but like...
Yeah. They're like somewhere in the deep... Well, they say in the deep south, don't they? Like Florida. It doesn't really say too much, does it? Do we see anything from when we see the town? And obviously all the zombies sort of coming out?
I'm not too sure. I do wonder if like some Americans who live there would know just by looking at it. But they're looking for survivors. So we've got Dr. Sarah, Miguel, who's the crazy army man. And then we've got our two, Billy Boy and John. And they're out looking for survivors, I guess. They land the helicopter and start shouting for people.
Is it survivors they're looking for? Or are they looking more zombies to kind of like for Dr. Logan to... slice up and experiment on. I don't know. We get some great zombies during this sequence, don't we? We get some great zombies. Obviously, with the title zombie with like half a face missing and a big horrible tongue hanging out. I mean, that's great. I mean, that is as good as anything we've got in like modern zombie effects, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't watch The Walking Dead, so I don't. Are the effects good in The Walking Dead?
Or? Yeah, I think. Yeah, do you watch The Walking Dead, Dom?
No, I watched a bit of the first series, but I kind of gave up on it.
Yeah.
Well, what they're kind of doing, like every few episodes, they'll throw in a really, really good zombie creature effect, like someone who's like bloated, has been like in the water for ages, or someone who's just like in half or something ridiculous. Most of them are pretty standard, but yeah, we've seen the half face guy. We've seen him in The Walking Dead as well, and that looks just as good. There is actually a homage to Bub in one episode of The Walking Dead. I think it might be series 4. Basically, they're in like an underground tunnel. And it just focuses on a zombie for a few seconds. And he's dressed exactly the same as Bub, and he's got like a collar around his neck. But it is an official homage as well.
Yeah.
But there's another bit as well, I think, where there's a zombie who rolls out of bed and all his guts fall out, which
That's a pretty horrific scene in this as well.
Yeah.
So they're looking for survivors. Miguel starts shouting for them, and then like within about a minute, there's like a whole horde of zombies and one alligator chasing them, like running towards them, or like
an alligator with his mouth tied up. You can
really, I didn't see that.
Yeah, he's definitely got it like bound to as not to bite the extras.
I did wonder, is he a zombie alligator? Like, I kind of figured if he wasn't, they'd be trying to eat him.
Oh, yeah, we didn't really get into that, do we?
No,
I like to think he was. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I don't know whether there's precedent in the films for zombie animals.
Yeah. I was trying to think if there is any zombie animals in any zombie film. Train to Busan opens with that deer. That's the only one I can really think of.
Is he zombified?
Yeah.
Zombie dogs in Resident Evil.
Yeah.
Just about. And Resident Evil Outbreak, they end up in a zoo, don't they? In one of the sections. I think there's like a zombie elephant, like zombie lions and shit, monkeys, zombie giraffe.
With a big fluffy neck.
That is horrible. That's pretty terrifying.
Have you played Outbreak, Dom?
Is that the PS2 one?
What was the new one called, Ben? I thought we were talking about that one. The very new. Was it
7? Oh, what? Just Resident Evil 7, yeah. Resident Evil 7 Biohazard.
I thought it had like a Biohazard. That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah. Okay, yeah, so then they realize that there ain't no survivors in Florida or wherever they are. And then they get the helicopter out and they go back to a little bunker. And then they get out. Miguel slaps Dr. Sarah for some reason. And then within a second, he says, I'm sorry, and then hugs her. And then we go down into the bunker and we get like an idea of where the rest of the film is from. It's going to take place. There is 1, 2, 3, 4 sections to the bunker. So there's the mess room, which is where they all eat together. There's the and that's where the army people hang around. There's a lab sort of section where Dr. Frankenstein cuts people up and experiments on zombies and stuff. There's a little caravan where John and Billy Boy hang out. And then there's a place where they store all of the zombies for testing. And so we go down here. Miguel, I think he maybe lies down or has a nap or something because he's completely lost it now. And then Dr. Frank, they need more zombies or something, so they try to get some out of this little, I don't know what you call it.
Little pen.
Yeah. And then they give, like, as part of that process, they kind of hook him around the neck and they give it to Miguel. And Miguel, being sort of weak, and I think he's not slept or something, and he lets it go. Zombie gets away, but they kill him and it's all okay. But then what happens?
Why did they give the hook to Miguel at that particular point? I mean, he's off his nut.
He's clearly
off his nut.
Dr. Sarah wanted it, and then he was like, "I'd rather give it to a man." I think that was like part of the politics underlying here.
That is right. Yeah. You're right. So not only are the military guys like pompous, they're sexist as well.
Yeah, very sexy.
God damn it.
Steel.
God, sexy.
I was going to say Blade.
I said sexist.
I think his name's Blade, but I think it's Steel. Steel and Rickles. Steel.
Steel and Rickles.
Ludicrous name, yeah.
He's given himself that nickname. He's gone, from now on, yeah. Call me Steel. Oh, no, we don't want to. We'll just call you a normal name, Dave. Steel, from now on.
It's funny because
in this zombie apocalypse world, I'm Steel.
It's funny because I know a guy who calls himself Blade. I don't know who gave him that. I don't think anyone gave him that nickname, but he just says, call me Blade. And his name's Dave or something like that.
And do you commit to calling him Blade?
Well, it's just what everyone knows him as. He's not in my age group. He's he's like my uncle's friend or something. Like, he's an older guy.
And does he carry a blade?
There's got
to
be a story there.
Yeah, there's got to be.
I've no idea, but this is in the time, like, because I went on holiday with my family, and then it was like a big family one, and there was like friends of family there as well, and Blade, and they were like, "This is Uncle Chris, this is Blade." And
are you terrified?
Well, I've been a big
just
fan
has
of
two swords on his back.
Yeah, I was expecting like Wesley Snipes to rock up, but it's just Blade in his Manchester United T-shirt.
You'd think he'd support like Sheffield United or something.
Yeah.
They're the Blades, by the way.
Football. Football.
Football.
So then we're in the mess hall, which is like the big lunch area. So this is where we first introduced to Rhodes, who's like, "This is my town, guys. I'm running this joint." He says a bit more aggressively than that, though. And see what happens. So he's mad because he doesn't think that the scientists are really doing anything. They're not sure why they're even there looking after these scientists. They're not sure why they're risking their lives. And a lot of them are dying, sort of getting these zombies out of these pens and bringing them new test subjects and stuff, which is sort of fair enough. I can understand that. Like, they're basically giving up their lives for something that they don't even believe in or they're not even sure about. Dr. Susan is like, Dr. Sarah is like,
Susan.
We're making progress. And then Dr. Frankenstein comes in and he's like the mad scientist dude. Again, a bit of a caricature of a character.
I like to think of him as like Dark Timeline Emmett Brown.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that definitely works.
And his hair, like, it's almost purposefully messy. It's like completely flat on one side and like spiked out on the left hand side. And it's like they've gone, this is what mad scientists look like.
And he never ever washes himself. Like, his hands are perpetually bloody.
Yeah.
Blood.
Yeah.
Just give him a rinse. Just give him a quick rinse before you come out. But no, he's just covered in blood constantly. Yeah, the work we're doing is fine. It's great. Covered Edso in blood.
Yeah. And, he's like, I need some... Where's the food? He just starts shouting for food because, like, he's... I think he's on the autistic spectrum, perhaps. I don't know. But he's like... he's just expecting food and the Rhodes is like, look, man, we're not giving you no food. Tell us what you're doing in there. And then he's like, Dr. Frankenstein says, like, we made some great progress. Come and have a look and I'll show you the progress. And then you'll see him. You'll want to, like, continue doing the work for us and all that kind of thing. But then, wait, something big happens here. I'm completely missing it. What happens? So...
There's that kind of standoff between Sarah, because she basically says, I'm done with this nonsense and wants to leave.
And then he orders the other guy to point the gun at her.
Yeah, he basically tells her to sit down or I'm going to shoot you. Well, I'm not going to shoot you. My mate's going to shoot you, which is pretty respectable, you know?
Yeah. The more I think about it, the more like this has like incredible like Vietnam War sort of like... parallelisms all the way through. So she says, okay, I'll sit down. And then do we meet Bub pretty much straight after that? Do the whole salute thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's around about now, yeah. I think he just shows Rhodes some of the progress he's made with Bub and some of the things he's kind of taught him to do. Is this when he like shows him the phone and...
Oh, actually, yeah, before we get to Bub, we have that shot of Sarah goes in to see the work that Frankenstein's doing, and it's like our first autopsy thing he pulls the sheet back and it's that brain. And that was the thing that I'd forgotten about until I rewatched it this time, and it suddenly like came back to me. It's like, oh, this is horrible. Like, that one particularly gets me. Because, like, you can see the back of his head still there with some hair on it. It's horrible.
You can, like, see the brain stem going into the spinal cord. Yeah, it's gruesome. Yeah.
Cool. And there was, like, some disposed of body just, like, on the ground, wasn't there? And it was just like, oh, yeah, he died.
Yeah. And it was he, like, one of the privates, one of the army people? He's just like, yeah, he's dead. And then he gave them another body to bury instead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That kind of sets up some stuff further down the line.
Yeah, so that like pretty much sets up who he is as well. He doesn't really have a moral compass in terms of people's lives and feelings for how their bodies should be treated. He just sees them as subjects and tools to further his research. So then we're I'm pretty sure it's around there we're introduced to the Bub properly, and Bub is this sort of a tied up zombie who is basically like a dog learning tricks. Is this the point where he gives him the Walkman? Or
I think that might be a bit later. I think this time he gives him does he give him a gun? Sort of show.
Is that this bit? So that's when Rhodes comes in and Bub sees him and doesn't like him instantly. It's like when a stranger comes into a dog's house and the dog's like looking at him, hackles are up. And
I guess it's sort of hinting that he's got some essence of his humanity left.
Yeah,
he's got some memory of the man he once was, because we find out he was an army man. He was in the army in some capacity, or a military man, because he recognizes when he listens to the older. To listen to the old Walkman, he listens to, is it just Star Spangled Banner or something similar to that? Or just some sort of like lovely military music in that?
I'm not too sure what he listens to actually, I can't remember. But he salutes, doesn't he? Salutes Rhodes.
Once he sees, Rhodes' uniform, I think.
Yeah. And then why does he go to shoot him? Like, so they give Bub a gun, like with no ammo, but he just goes to shoot the colonel. Like, why would he salute him and then try to shoot him?
I think maybe Rhodes just like gives Dr. Logan a little bit of abuse at this point, and then Bub's like, I'm not having this. I'm gonna pop a cap in your ass.
Yeah. But like, Rose is not impressed. He's like, this isn't good enough. I'm not too sure why do they stay then? I'm not too sure what happens here. Or is that the point where they start to say they're going to leave?
Yeah, well, I think it's constantly hanging over them that they want out, really, isn't it? All of the military guys pretty much want to leave. They've got no interest, and they think everything the doctors are doing down there is pretty much useless. But then Dr. Logan is trying to put across his point that he's getting somewhere. He's teaching these, well, at least one of them, but he's getting somewhere with the zombies that he feels like he's going to eventually get there where he can teach some of them to be docile, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess that's the end goal for him, is that he can teach some of them to be docile, and then they can go out there into the big wide world, apply these methods to the other zombies and essentially domesticate them, most of them.
You can definitely see why the military guys are getting frustrated, because we've watched it and we can't even figure out what the scientists' plan possibly be.
Yeah,
like they seem so.
Like Dr. Susan, Sarah, Dr. Sharon. She says she wants to reverse the process. We don't see any evidence of her research at all. Like,
is that one bit of her spinning the test tubes for like 2 seconds?
Yeah.
And then she's like, oh, forget this, and she goes to get a paracetamol or whatever.
She's just procrastinating all the time, that one. And then Frankenstein or Dr. Logan's he's getting some results, but I don't see how they can scale that to like the millions of zombies outside. There is really no practical use to that other than like he's discovering stuff.
Yeah. It would take forever. Go on, Dom.
Oh, I was just going to say, Sarah does say to him, like, when he's trying to show her the progress he's made with the surgery, and she says, only a handful of people can do that. There's no way that we could actually scale this up beyond this lab, you know.
Did she say that?
Yeah, when it's when that exposed brain zombie is on the table, she says, you know, it's kind of useless because there's only a handful of scientists that can do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is kind of pointless what they're doing in a way. And I guess maybe the only people who sort of have any sense are John and Billy, who just sort of, they've made their own little corner of paradise in their caravan, and they're just sort of drinking and chatting and just chilling there.
What accent has Billy Bob got?
I thought it was Irish, but it was a little bit... I'm thinking the wrong guy. Even gonna John?
Yeah. Oh. Which one do I mean, John?
I think so. I'm not completely sure.
It was like the Caribbean dude.
Yeah.
John. Yeah.
John. Is that John? Sorry, I mixed up their names.
Billy is a Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. Three times in the first 5 minutes.
Does he? Anyway, didn't get that. But yeah, I think I got Caribbean, but it sounded kind of a fake accent to me.
The guy who... I'm pretty sure I read... I forget where it was. Maybe it was on IMDb, but I'm pretty sure I read that the actor's from Detroit, and it said in the script for him to put on an accent.
Yeah. But he's sort of like, they're like the more normal people in the whole situation. And then at some point in all this, they need more zombies from the pen, which is pretty much when the shit starts to hit the fan. So they trust Miguel again to do something. Like, he has to do his whole hook them around the neck job as they're coming out of the pen. But
he's awful at that.
I don't think it's actually his fault this time, but, you know, it happens twice, Miguel. You can't... No one else has had this problem. And so he's got him around the neck, and then it, like, snaps.
Yeah.
And then the zombies go crazy. They bite a throat out of one guy.
Miguel's arm on this bit, yeah, as well, didn't they?
Get him right on the wrist or the forearm, wherever it is. And then Miguel runs away. Miguel's such like a heroic guy. Just pegs it.
He's a liability. He's an absolute liability, Miguel, at this point.
Yeah. Steel isn't happy because obviously his mate's been bit in the throat and he had to shoot him in the head. So Dr. Sandra runs after Miguel, and they go back to the caravan where John and Billy are. And then this bit's pretty gruesome, where she to stop the infection, she chops it into his arm. Like, it looked like real, like the way he sort of went straight through the arm. It was almost like It's pretty much on like audition sort of level for me. That was like right.
She did it. She did it. She did it. She was pretty cool with doing it as well, wasn't she? There was no time wasting from her. She was straight there. Get the arm off.
Yeah,
it is very matter of fact.
Yeah. And then burn the wound.
Do you feel like she burned the wound for a little bit too long? Like, I'm sure it didn't take that long for like the flesh to cauterize. Like, she had like a little. Did she have like a stick of like a flaming stick? And she's just prodding the bleeding arm for like a good 5 minutes, it seemed.
You think she was enjoying it a little bit too much?
And then he like, well, he could hear. Yeah, I think so. Well, Miguel, like, he's fucked up again, so he has to be like punished in somewhere or another. But like he like looks up and sees his arm like being burned, and he doesn't yeah. scream or anything. He didn't seem that bothered.
Oh, blummin' heck. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Passes out then.
So whilst this is happening, the army guys, like Rose is like, right, cut the shit, we're going now. So they need to go and get... Oh, no, wait. This is when the army people go to Frankenstein's lab and they see that Frankenstein's been feeding Bub meat from somewhere, and then they realize that he's been feeding them. They find like some dead army fellow's body bits.
Yeah.
By the way, when I saw that bit, I thought it was just seeing the sort of stack of body parts, I found quite gruesome as well. Kind of difficult to look at. But
it affects you.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So then they Rose loses his shit and he shoots up Frankenstein, and then they go to the caravan and they're like, John, you're the helicopter pilot, we need you. There's another scientist guy we completely forgot about, we haven't mentioned, but he's kind of a nonsense character. They kill him. And then John says no, I guess. What happens there?
John pretty much says no, and then he doesn't say spare this dude's life, otherwise I'm not gonna do anything for you. And then this is when they chuck the Dr. Sandra, Sarah. you made me forget what her name is now. That's when they chuck them in the pen, don't they?
Yeah, in the zombie pen. Yeah.
So there's not enough room in the helicopter for all of us.
Yeah.
Get in. There's not enough room in the helicopter. Get in the pen.
Yeah.
Yeah, you like it.
Rhodes' famous catchphrase. Get in the pen.
Get in the pen.
Get in the pen. Like, he'd be screaming it, surely.
This is when Bub kind of discovers that Dr. Logan's been shot up as well. And he ain't happy. Bub is not happy. He's escaped. He's managed to get his chains free. And he's found himself a piece. He's found himself a nice little weapon. And he remembers how to use it. And he's carrying it. He's one-man trip for revenge now.
He's walking around that lab like, you know, the scene in RoboCop where he's first walking. And like all the it's just his feet like walking across the floor, and he's like got the sort of cowboy John Wayne sort of thing going on.
He's like a man who's just come home after a heavy night out, and he's walking around the kitchen thinking, "What can I eat?"
Yeah,
and he's got that demeanor about him as he's shuffling about.
So they John manages to escape, I think, and then he runs into the pen to find the others. Miguel becomes full on suicidal now. He's like, "I'm not living without an arm." And then he,
it was a really good like amputee sort of style thing, because it looked pretty real, didn't it? I mean, it was around about here, wasn't it? And it looked pretty legit.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I know he was like.
So he basically goes up to the surface and then lets all the zombies into the bunker. So this is where the shit's really hitting the fan. So we got the three main characters in the pen. Where there's like loads of zombies, it's all like a mining area sort of around there. So the zombies everywhere, it's pitch black. And then we've got the army people running away from this whole horde of zombies, which are like a flood coming into the bunker. They're running away, and then
they've got a little golf cart as well. Little golf cart to mill about with. Pretty cool.
And then we come to the bit where I can't remember how Steel dies, but I remember how Rickles dies. Because Rickles, by the way, all the way through the film, he's got this horrific laugh.
Yeah.
He's always laughing. It's like a chipmunk sort of thing, chipmunk quality. And then he falls to the floor. He gets ripped apart by zombies in such a horrific way. Like, he's the one where they peel back his face and and his eyeball and stuff. Is he the one with the vocal cords? Because there's one of them where they're ripping him. Like, there's a guy screaming.
There's one. Might be the vocal cords one. Yeah,
Rickles is just like his eyeball becomes exposed and in his head. I think Steel gets bit on the neck because he ends up shooting himself.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
There must have been Rickles with the old with the vocal cords then.
There's one of them where they're screaming, and then as they're like ripping their throat up, do you sort of see like tendons stretch in the throat, and then
because his entire head comes up, right?
Yeah,
and he just gets higher and higher pitch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like it's like they're ripping the vocal cord, they're stretching him, and the voice gets higher and higher pitch until it just like snaps, and then there's no voice. But that bit was so horrific.
That was horrific. That was gruesome. That was like the combination of what you could see and then hearing that. It was just like, it was always like, oh god, you can kind of imagine getting your it reminded me of a little bit of The Thing, that stuff with all the tendrils and the and just the weird sort of like body horror.
Yes, full on body horror
stuff.
Yeah.
It's just it was nasty.
But then
just before you move on with the plot, what do you think? Did Miguel have a plan, or did he really just want to
fuck everyone up,
to screw everyone over? Yeah.
If he just wanted to commit suicide, why would you want to commit suicide by getting eaten alive by a horde of zombies? That's got to be the worst. That's got to be the worst way to go. I thought he was going to have some sort of explosive on him. I don't know why, but it ended up being just the remote to put the elevator down.
Yeah.
What a way to go! You just had an arm off.
I think we've got to come to the conclusion here that Miguel was a double agent, because he was working for the zombies this whole time. Because whatever opportunity he got, he took it to try and like fuck everyone up with a hook around the neck twice. He let that go, and then he slapped.
It just happened to break when he was holding it.
Yeah, whoops. and then he punches Dr. Susie in the face right at the start of the film, slaps her, I think. And then right at the end, he lets all the zombies. That is a dick move. Like if there ever was a dick move, it was that.
That's gone.
I wonder whether do you think he went to the lift and he was thinking, right, I'm going to go up here and there'll probably be some kind of clearing that I can get through, because it seems purely just to screw everyone over. He didn't communicate with Sarah or the others and say like, get out quick and I'll distract them or whatever. Yeah.
Well, I think in all honesty, I think he represents the sort of misanthropic cynicism of, we should all just be dead anyway now. This just needs to end now. There's no hope. Let's just get it over with. So whilst everyone's sort of dying and our heroes are disappearing through the mine, Bub finds Dr. Shouty Pants, no, sorry, Corporal Shouty Pants, and shoots him. This is actually the best part of the film for me, where Bub shoots him. And in terms of Rose's performance, this bit actually I felt was quite believable. When he gets shot, it did seem like he'd actually been shot. Because he sort of crawls away in this sort of like half, he's trying to get away and he's just shouting, "You shot me," over and over again. It's like a half like Igor walk away, and then like the lift opens, a whole horde of zombies grab him, and I may have dreamt this bit, but I'm sure Bub salutes him again.
He does, yeah.
Okay, cool, yeah. And then this brings us towards the end of the film, so they get out of the mine.
You didn't mention him saying "choke on him" as he's being
ripped apart.
Which bit was that?
He screams like as they're eating his stomach. Yeah. The last thing he says is like "choke on him."
Yeah.
So he's like a dirtbag right to the end.
Oh, amazing.
That was kind of replicated in something, wasn't it? Where someone's being eaten by a zombie and they're almost like helping them eat him. Is that Shaun of the Dead, or is that
there is a Dead Set? Which is Charlie Brooker's Dead Set.
Yeah, that is exactly what it is. That is exactly what it is. With that really horrible.
It's Andy Nyman.
Douchebag.
Yeah,
that's right.
He's screaming, "You fuckers," or something. He's like calling them names as they're basically eating his stomach. There's a really great scene actually, but I didn't realize I didn't realize that was sort of homage to this until I watched this.
Yeah, he's kind of like just tearing out his own guts and like feeding them to the zombies, like in a real aggressive way, like, yeah, whatever, eat me then.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty underrated, actually, that dead set.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's pretty much like the precursor to Black Mirror to me, in terms of that satirical horror sort of Charlie Brooker
style.
Yeah.
It was really well done, I thought. Yeah. Really well done.
Amazing. So they get out of the mine, which I don't really understand, because they find themselves on the helicopter pad again. But surely if they could do that, then the zombies could have done that before.
Yeah.
When they should have been sort of locked outside the fence. It doesn't really make sense that bit. But anyway, they get in the helicopter. There is a final jump scare where they open the helicopter and then like hands come out towards Dr.
Sarah.
Sarah. Sally. Dr. Sally. I started thinking of another one. And then they just cut to like some like island where they're like drinking alcohol and chilling on a beach. I think then that's how
ideal, idyllic.
I'll be honest, I wasn't keen on the way it ended, just because it just seemed like it was a budget cut. Like you could definitely like, where was the helicopter ride away? They should have been like riding away, and they should have been looking down at the zombies, which are now like filtering into the bunker, and they should have seen all that chaos.
But it could have ended there.
Yeah, it could have ended with them, you know, flying off into the distance.
Yeah, that would have been an acceptable ending. I think we didn't really necessarily need that one, but I guess I can't really remember the ending so much of Dawn of the Dead. In the remake of Dawn of the Dead, they go to an island, don't they? But it does still have zombies on it. I can't remember if they did that. And
they did. There's more zombies on the island. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, they kind of like go, oh, we've made it to a... They leave, obviously leave on a boat. They end up at another sort of lovely island where they're like, oh, there's apparently no one here. And as they sort of approach, walk along the pier, zombies do sort of like descend on them. I don't know if they did that in the original, though. I can't really remember.
It just ends off with Flyboy and whatever her name is on the roof of the mall, and then they fly away, and that's it.
That's right.
I feel like this film could have done with a similar ending to The Mist. You know when
oh my god,
because the idea of the end of The Mist is when they drive off, and then it just seems never ending. There's monsters everywhere. It just feels like they're never going to get to a point where they've escaped this chaos. And they could have flown off and just seen zombies and zombies and zombies wherever they went, and it could have just ended with that sort of, because I think that's what this film was trying to say, was
hopeless ending.
It's hope, like there are literally zombies everywhere now. This is the day of the dead. There is too many of them now. But then it has this whole desert, remote island drinking out of coconut scene.
I feel like this is Romero trying to make it more palatable in some way, because Night of, everyone's dead. Dawn of, two of the four survive. And then in this, it's like everyone you really care about has made it and they're in paradise.
That's a good point. Yeah. And then there's a bit of a bookend style mirror to the start, where I think she starts a new calendar. But that seems a little bit forced as well. Like,
I think like calendar stuff, you kind of like, wouldn't care about. I would have liked an ending when we saw Bub somewhere wandering out, doing something, cool. And I don't know, putting a hat on or something. That would have been good.
Yeah,
cowboy hat.
I finished
winking at some female zombies. Yeah.
They should have recreated the first scene when they're all in the hall shouting at each other, but with Bub playing Rhodes, just like moaning everyone really loud.
That would be good.
So in terms of like directing style, for me, I think Tom Savini did the practical effects. That like just stole the show for me. Like I just love this film mainly because of the practical effects.
They were outstanding, really stellar for that sort of era. I mean, we know we get a lot of great stuff from the 80s, obviously, but a lot of bad stuff as well, so it was good to see. Yeah. Good to see it was all pretty up there. Some of the zombies were just like, slathered in grey or green muck. Yeah. but that was just for like the crowd scenes, I guess. But a lot of the important sort of gruesome bits were really well done.
Yeah.
It's just sort of fun to see something where there's effects that you're like, I really can't figure out exactly how they did that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it seems that so much of the actor is gone. Like, you think, well, where were they?
There was the bit where there's like a zombie sit like lying on a gurney, and he sort of his straps snap, and he stands up, or like leans to his side, and it's like lasagna falls out of his stomach, like. And it looked, but I was like exactly the same bit. I couldn't see where his body actually was behind the lasagna. And the, like, it just seemed, I don't know, unreal in places. And the, I'm telling you, the vocal cord bit, like, was so, like, so inspired. I've never seen that done like that again anywhere or in that same way.
It's surprising that hasn't been redone. Exactly. I mean, it might have been, but it's surprising. Yeah. It was very, very impactful. It was almost like, what was that? What was? Oh, I did have to rewind it and sort of take that bit in again to make sure that bit definitely happened.
Yeah,
it was great. There's a bunch of behind the scenes footage that surfaced somehow. I think it's actually like from Tom Savini's camcorder that he took on set to document everything.
Yeah,
it somehow got out. It's all on YouTube, and basically you can see quite a lot of the big effect shots being set up. And if you ever want to kind of peek behind the curtain, that they're really interesting.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not really ruined the magic of it for me. In some ways it was, you know, it was like, wow,
added to it.
They put so much work into the shot.
To say, like, it wasn't like a massive budget film.
Was it 3.5 million possibly? Did I not see that recently?
I've got some trivia yet. So don't be saying
numbers. Right, don't be saying nothing about the numbers, mate. Yeah, forget the numbers. 3 point anything, yeah.
Yeah. So in terms of like jump scares and shit your pants moments, jump scares is like two, which were like proper jump scares, which were, there's essentially the same jump scare twice. It's that bit with the arms coming out the wall. It's just arms coming out of like empty space, really.
Yeah. Oh, you get when a Dr. Sarah goes into visit Dr. Logan at one point. Bub scares her, doesn't he?
Comes up behind her.
So it goes to her, and he's right there. I did read somewhere that there are rumors that it sounded like he says "I'm sorry" after he scares her. But I did go and listen back to it, and it was kind of just like moaning.
Yeah.
But obviously, we didn't mention over that he does actually speak in the film when Dr. Logan hands him a phone and tells him that his aunt.
What does he say?
He says something like, hello, Aunt something.
Aunt Elisa or...
Aunt Elisa, yeah, yeah. It's Aunt Elisa on the phone. Say hi, Aunt Elisa. Sort of
oh,
says,
yeah, yeah, I remember now. Yeah, yeah.
Which I don't know the relevance in that.
Yeah, there might be some significance to that.
Yeah.
Oh, I think the... Do you think the head reveal, like the separated head with the
brain,
the wires on it? Not the revealed brain, but the head of one of the military, because it kind of is. They react.
Scare. Yeah, yeah. And is his face like moving or something, or his eyes?
Yeah,
are moving.
The eyes are still going.
Yeah. That's pretty gruesome. I think in terms of shitty pants moments, I think the sawing of the chopping of the arm. That did affect me. I thought that was pretty scary. And just the zombie ripping people up, like. It was amazing. that for me made the film. But it wasn't, I wouldn't say it was scary. It was just fun, a fun horror film.
I think it was quite creepy. As I mentioned at the start, like the claustrophobic nature of it definitely made it. Because I think that's what obviously George A. Romero's done, especially in the trilogy of the Dead films, the claustrophobic element. With Night of, it's just a house. With Dawn of, obviously the shopping mall. It's all sort of like quite close quarters, everything, which I guess is what makes the whole zombie thing quite scary anyway.
Because
they're quite slow and shuffling.
Yeah.
You kind of feel like you're only really going to be threatened by them if you're in these scenarios. And I guess it makes the most of being in quite a claustrophobic environment to really accentuate the horror element.
I was more scared of the humans in this than zombies, which I guess is actually the point.
Just annoyed by them, if anything.
okay, so I've got some
trivia.
We didn't
really talk about the sound.
Is there anything like the music? Say, like,
Yeah, and just kind of the noise when they're going to the pen where they keep the test subjects, just kind of the noise of them down the tunnel is pretty good. You know, it's always there and it's kind of just wailing, echoing down the...
Well, like, yeah, throughout the film, just, you can just hear them in the background or...
Whenever you go, whenever they go to the bits to get more of them, yeah. Or I think there's even that bit when Sarah's gone to the caravan and she's sat in the little garden they've made.
Yeah.
You can definitely hear them.
Oh, God. Kind of, can you imagine just hearing zombies all the time?
That's how I was thinking, imagining the smell as well.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole place, especially with Frankenstein walking around constantly covered in, like, entrails.
Just have a shower. You haven't had a shower in months. Yeah. Oh, there's important work to be done.
So I've got some trivia. I don't know how you want to do this. Did you just sort of both want to chime in?
Yeah,
this we'll is Ben's up. Thing. He's got we'll he's on, a, have... on a roll.
I think we should both do it, Dom. If we both have a little pop, because then we can make it a little bit more. We could make a little bit more of a game of it, I guess.
Okay, so
on a roll.
This is a quote that George A. Romero said about the film. He said, "This film is a tragedy." So basically, did he say or didn't he say this? It's a tragedy about how. A lack of human communication causes chaos and collapse, even in this small little slice of pie society. And by pie, I mean cherry pie. True or false?
Are we answering for the whole quote?
Yeah. What are we doing? We might just change one word. You might have said apple pie.
Well,
true. I reckon that's true.
Dumb.
Sure, it's true.
Well, you can have a half a point, I guess, because he did say most of that, but he didn't say it was like cherry pie. He did not specify the flavor.
You don't say.
He didn't even specify the flavor. You answered, this is mad. This is madness. I can't work like this. This is crazy.
I put words in his mouth. I literally put cherry pie in his mouth. okay, so number two. this is true. Romero originally intended the film to be the Breakfast of Tiffany's of zombie films.
you've already ruined this because you said it at the start. I like about this the most is that you're laughing at your own mistreatment of the trivia. Yeah.
Okay, so
we didn't even get to hear it before you laughed that time.
So he intended the film to be the Breakfast of Tiffany's of zombie films. Is that true or false?
False.
Okay, so you got that one correct. So, okay, we sort of know this one already. The budget was cut in half from $7 million to a scant $3.5 million to allow Romero to stick to his own artistic vision and to make the film unrated. True or false?
Scant. True.
Okay, that's Dom, what are you going for?
True.
Okay, cool. That's correct, yeah. The alligator we see at the beginning of the film was brilliantly portrayed by Andy Serkis Sr.
actually almost fell off my chair.
Who performed the role in front of a green screen and was implanted afterwards.
We're laughing because that one's so obvious, Luke. Like, that one's definitely true.
Okay, cool. I'll take that as a true answer. I'm afraid you got that one wrong.
Did he play anyone else?
Not in this one, no. So we know what the answer to that is. It's true, right?
Yep.
Okay, at the end of the first Resident Evil film, there is a newspaper that blows past, which has the headline, The Dead Walk, which is a direct reference to the newspaper in this
that's
film.
True. That is true. That's when she shotguns. She's walking through the street and she sort of shotguns and, yeah, there's definitely a paper that says The Dead Walk.
Dumb.
Ben seems very confident, so...
bloody hope so now.
Okay, so... The last one then. So some of the zombies in the film, the actors playing the zombies, were paid a dollar on a sandwich and a bottle of root beer to be in the film.
Was it a dollar? A what?
A dollar on a sandwich and a bottle of root beer.
Yeah, that sounds good enough to me. Yeah, definitely.
Well, Dom?
I've heard differently to that.
Have you? It'd be interesting to know it. So
didn't they get a copy of the paper as well, The Dead Walk on it? Did I not read that somewhere?
I think the thing that I heard was that they got a baseball cap that said, "I was a zombie in Day of the Dead."
Oh wow!
Well, I don't know because this is what I read was they got paid a dollar and a sandwich. I added a bottle of root beer. no, I don't know then. Maybe that's wrong.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I've lost count of what the scores are anyway. So
you got half a point for the cherry pie one. Both of you. The Breakfast at Tiffany's was false, you got that right. So 1.5. The budget was cut from 7 million, you got that right. So 2.5. Alligator was Andy Serkis scene, you got that right. 3.5. And then 4.5 for the Dead Walk newspaper. So let's just say 4.5 out of 5.
4.5 out of 5. Yeah. That's pretty good going there.
Yeah. Okay, so
everyone's a winner. Yeah. I don't know who won that. Everyone's a winner. Let's just say.
So I guess we've got to come to the point where we sort of talk about the rating of the film and we average it out normally. Dom, what would you give this film?
I think it was good fun. The gore effects are very good, probably the strongest thing. Acting's kind of hit or miss. I would say B minus.
Okay. And Ben?
I really enjoyed it. I mean, like, I love zombie films. I love modern zombie stuff, and I love all the classic George A. Romero stuff as well. It's kind of got like a really good vibe to it. It kind of feels it's a bit ridiculous, but yeah, like it is a bit scary anyway. I think, like, for me, my first official in into the zombie genre, not just including films, was the original Resident Evil film and the original Resident Evil game.
Yeah,
not the
yeah.
film. and like the dialogue and the voice acting in that is absolutely awful, but it kind of like that is kind of part of its charm.
Yeah.
And I feel like that about this film. Like, yes, it's a bit over the top. Yes, it's a bit ridiculous. Yes, a lot of the characters are caricatures of, you know, scientists and soldiers and yeah. But I do think that is part of its charm. So I think I'll give it a B.
Okay. So I really enjoyed this film. I thought it was great. I've enjoyed this the most out of any film so far. But I would give it a B. I would have given it an A, but I just can't get over some of that acting. Like, it was just so one note in time, especially Rhodes. And I just feel like, I know he's doing a caricature, but even still, he was still quite scary in some of the scenes. But I feel like if you put like Tom Hardy in that role, there would be an up and down. There'd be like levels, and it'd still be fucking terrifying. Like, he'd get quiet and he'd get in your face, and like this guy was just shouting all the time. Like, I don't know.
So the actor who plays Rhodes, Joseph Pilato.
Yeah.
He's also in Dawn of the Dead, but just as a police officer. I don't know how big of a role he's got, but
one of the SWAT team or something at the start.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Interesting.
And just from looking at his filmography, he's also in Pulp Fiction as the Dean Martin lookalike in the diner scene, shouting his bloody head off as well.
Yeah, so I guess we average out as a B, a slightly low B, but it's good. I really enjoyed it. Next
good fun
on the list is actually another zombie film. I mean, not a zombie film. Another film I really, really like. It's Drag Me to Hell. Have you seen it?
Yeah. Oh man,
I haven't seen it.
Sam Raimi. Sam Raimi again. The second Sam Raimi film on this list so far.
Yeah, and it's a very Sam Raimi film. Like, it fits into the whole Evil Dead sort of. It's actually scary, but it fits into the whole Evil Dead sort of like tone, I guess, so well. And it's got Hungarian gypsies in it, which is my nickname to my father-in-law. That's what he calls me. He calls me Hungarian gypsy all the time. But yeah, so
Blade.
Yeah, I've got strange.
Ben, family. Remember that one for the trivia section.
I will.
Okay, so this show is brought to you by the Story Studio Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to www.hawkandcleaver.com and grab a free book. Become a patron for access to early access to episodes, bonus content, and heaps of free stuff over at patreon.com/HawkandCleaver. Thanks to that guy for doing the music. Thanks to Acast for hosting this show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, give it a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. And remember to hit subscribe. Thanks to our guest today, zombie expert Dom. If we have any more zombie films, you want to come on again?
Sure, yeah, it's good fun.
In fact, no, Night of the Living Dead is on this list, so
so Dawn of the Dead's got to be on there as well, isn't it?
Dawn's not on there.
It's not on there, no.
Oh, what?
So I thought it was just called Day Out for Dawn.
Shaun of the Dead is on there.
Yeah.
Maybe they were like, it sounds too similar. We should go with the original, Shaun of the Dead. But where can we find you on Twitter in that, Dom?
I guess my name.
It's at Dom Biddle.
That was a test.
Yeah. So follow me at Legal Condor and follow Ben at Ben.
At Ben _ Errington.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Bye.
Bye. Thanks for having me.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.